Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Mr. Paul.
Hi, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Hey, this week you're continuing the discussion, maybe getting a little bit more technical this week, but I find a lot of people do have questions about how do IRAs work in a trust, a living trust, how they're designated, beneficiaries, all that kind of good stuff, because this makes some real differences, particularly when it comes to taxes.
Yes, it does. So the overall theme of the past couple shows are making sure that our finances are integrated properly into whatever plan we have, whether it's a will or whether it's a trust, because those are the only two tools that an estate planner can use. And the integrating part, specifically when we talk about IRAs, means that we have to deal with the beneficiary designation. Under IRS rules, an IRA must be held in the name of an individual. So number one, if we ever use a trust as the instrument to do our planning, we never move the IRA from the person's name into the trust name. Now, we would do that with bank accounts. We would do it with homes. We'll do it with investment accounts, life insurance policies. But we will not do it with an IRA, because if we did, then there would be an immediate tax that is due. And it would be like a withdrawal. And we do not want to do that. So therefore, in any type of estate planning, your IRA stays in your name. That's the starting block of everything that we do. Now, from this point on, any time that we talk about an IRA moving, it means after you die, after the original owner dies, the IRA needs to go to a beneficiary. So the only way to properly leave an IRA is to use a beneficiary designation. If you forget to use a beneficiary designation,
yeah, then what happens?
Yeah, then there's one of two rules that we're going to play by. Number one is that it may be required to be cashed out immediately, or if it defaults to an estate, you may be able to utilize that you can take the IRA out over a period of 5 years, but it must be fully liquidated in 5 years. So if there's no beneficiary, that means it defaults to the estate. In most cases, that is going to be cashed out, and an immediate tax is going to be paid by the beneficiaries. So they are going to lose, depending on how much it is for, they're going to lose anywhere from 20 to 33% of that IRA. And so that's a big tax bite that we could have avoided if we just did it right.
What if it was a Roth IRA? There's supposedly no taxes on that.
Yeah, that's a good point. So Roth IRAs do build without tax, and so that would be an exception to this rule of having an immediate tax. But then the same rule applies of it either needs to be cashed out immediately or you only have 5 years to cash it out. So it's just that the tax consequence is very different because we used a different mechanism of investing. And so, but the same rule of when it has to be cashed out still applies to both instruments, just the very different tax outcome, pending which one it is. So with an IRA, it stays in your name regardless of what tool you use, whether it's a will or whether it's a trust. But the beneficiary designation is very critical, and that's really what we're going to be talking about, because that is how you get your IRA to the proper beneficiary, is actually using the beneficiary designation. Now, as we talked about this in past shows, so you can go over to legacyandfaith.com and catch up on some of this discussion. But a beneficiary designation is a legal contract with the institution that holds your money. So it doesn't matter what investment firm you use. When you sign to have that account and you say, this person is going to be my beneficiary, that's a legal contract that the institution must follow. So therefore, it's very important that those beneficiaries are properly aligned and that they integrate into your plan, because there could be a very different result of it going to someone's hands versus actually going into a trust.
So the beneficiary designation then in a proper way would be so-and-so's trust. Is that what you mean? Can you make the beneficiary designation a trust?
Yes, absolutely. And now, here is going to be some of the technical part of the discussion. And again, it's very, very important that somebody not just simply go, oh, I have a trust, but my IRA beneficiaries are my kids, so I'm going to listen to Paul's radio show and I'm going to do what he says. No, please don't do that. This is not legal advice. This is educational. So please, before you make any adjustments to any asset as it relates to your estate plan, I beg of you, please get the advice of a competent attorney who deals with this area of law, because this specifically is extremely complicated when we start dealing with IRAs. So many trusts do not have proper language in them that if an IRA came to them, it would be treated as if it was an estate. So then we just talked about that. That means that you have to immediately cash it out and pay tax consequences, or you have a five-year rule that you have to cash it out under because the trust was not properly designed. So that's why you need to have an attorney review your trust before you make and do anything that we talk about. So please, again, do not just simply change your beneficiaries. That's a bad idea. They need to be integrated into your plan, and it is my highest recommendation that you sit down with your estate planning attorney and review how the plan works versus how the assets need to be integrated into it. So when a trust is properly designed, it can receive an IRA, and there will not be an immediate tax consequence. But it has to be properly designed. So if your trust is, if your estate plan is more than just 3 years old, definitively more than 5 years old, you should be having your estate plan reviewed anyway. So therefore, there's probably a lot of things that have changed in most listeners' lives since they've done their estate plan. It is high time that you sit down with somebody and have a person review your plan and review all of your assets to make sure that they are properly integrated and that they're going to accomplish the same vision. And that's unfortunately what happens is that too often is that the plan says one thing, the asset does something different, and there's a disconnect between the financial integration component. Therefore, the assets are moving in different places and the plan is never really fulfilled. And in what my hope is that as believers, we have actually sought after the heartbeat of God. We've heard his voice on what we should do with our plan. What should we give to our family? What should we give to ministry? What is our Heavenly Father speaking to us to do with our assets as our final piece of legacy, as our final step of stewardship? So I hope that that's your first thought process, that you actually go and seek after his heartbeat. Then we need to create the plan, and then we need all of our assets blended into that plan. Assets that are not properly integrated will do something different, and we've destroyed really what you hoped to get set up as God's ultimate plan for what he has spoken to you. So it is really critical that we align everything up. And yes, an IRA can be left to a trust, and there's a lot of power in that decision. But please do not do that without competent legal advice.
And the taxes are higher or lower if that's the case, if you've left the IRA to the trust?
Yeah, great question. Most trusts that I have seen, even with proper language, the trust oftentimes just kicks the income out to the beneficiary. So it's really oftentimes what I would call a tax neutral event. So if the income, so let's say I take $20,000 from the IRA in that year because that's what I need to do. That would be income to the trust. But now the trust terms say, hey, any income, just give it to Paul. So now the trust is going to, by the terms say, just go give it to the beneficiary. So the income tax effect, as a general rule, there's always exceptions. So as a general rule, would follow the income. So therefore, it would become tax neutral. Now, a trust that is properly designed, that is an accumulation trust, can actually have a tax benefit. As a matter of fact, it could lower over 90% of all beneficiaries' overall tax, annual income tax burden by anywhere from 2 to 10%. So I don't know about you, but if there was a way that I could actually mitigate my children's tax burden on an annual basis because of what I'm giving them, I would prefer that my kids get another 2 to 10% than the federal government. So it's a misnomer. People naturally think that trusts are bad for taxes. And I am here to tell you that exactly the opposite is true when the trust is properly set up. And everything hinges on that. Everything hinges on the attorney's experience in setting up a proper design. So they can have a tax neutral effect. It can have a positive tax effect. And when it's not set up properly, it actually can be a harmful tax effect. So if the trust is to hold the assets and it does not give income away, then the trust would actually bear the entire tax burden. That would be the worst scenario. So that actually is a tax negative result when leaving an IRA to a trust. So the unfortunate part is that every possibility is on the table. It all depends on whether the trust is properly created, of whether or not an IRA should actually be left to a trust. And sometimes, just as another wrinkle in all of it, and we'll talk more about this on the back end here after our break, as we're coming up to our break, is that sometimes it doesn't matter if there's a tax issue. It doesn't matter if there is a negative tax issue, because sometimes we have a family issue that is so important that it does not matter what the tax consequence is. It is better to protect those that the money is being left to. So multiple scenarios, but the whole issue is what's in your family's best interest. I don't know until we actually sit down and talk.
Okay, people want to sit down and talk with you about these issues. How do they do that, Paul?
Head over to my website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts. There's educational opportunities coming up, ways to communicate with us. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, after the break, what about putting the house in the trust? And also maybe some new laws, not maybe, but there are some new laws regarding IRAs. We will discuss that as the Legacy and Faith Show continues in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or if you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memoriesworthtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memoriesworthtelling.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show this week, looking at financial integration, particularly as it has to do with IRAs and some changes maybe to IRA law. What about putting the house in the trust? All these questions. Paul Grant is diving in here. Boy, you're fearless on these subjects.
Sure, why not?
Okay. You love this.
Yeah, absolutely I do. We're all created differently, are we not? And I do enjoy talking about this because I really want to make a difference. I want to give some good information and some things to think about. So again, specifically with today's topic, as we're talking about IRAs, it is critically important that you not just do something based upon an educational discussion. You need specific advice. I encourage you to sit down with your estate planner, make sure they have a strong background in taxes and have done this many times to get to the right result. All right. So, you've mentioned, what about leaving a house in trust? Yeah, we really want all assets in a trust. So that there's two assets that I typically do not put in trust. Number one, the IRA. We talked about that at the beginning of the show. It must stay in your personal name. Otherwise, it is an immediate withdrawal, which means it's all taxed. Bad, bad, bad. So therefore, an IRA is not put into a name of the trust. The beneficiary may go to the trust when it's properly designed, but we don't put an IRA in trust. But otherwise, everything should go into a trust. There might be a vehicle that we don't put in trust as well. And that's because we have a non-probate way to actually transfer vehicles when we have family. So if you do not have children, if you do not have family members, then the vehicle we want to put it into a trust. But as a general rule, we don't put a vehicle into trust as well. So those are the only two assets. Otherwise, yes, houses, investments, checking accounts, we transfer businesses.
What about property and maybe rental homes and things like that?
Yeah, we want that into trust. So in other words, when we develop a trust, that is the instrument that guides everything when we pass away. So in other words, who gets what and how they are to utilize and take advantage of the assets. So therefore, because we have rich instructions in a trust, we want to make sure that every asset is integrated into it. That way, the instructions attach to the asset. So it is very rare that we want to leave an asset out. Another one that kind of gets squirmy is if you own timeshares. Everyone repeat after me, just don't do it.
Right.
If you own a timeshare, that would also be a discussion that you need to sit down and talk to your estate planning attorney of whether there is a cost advantage, whether somebody actually wants to take over the contract when you pass away. So that would be another asset that is kind of on the edge of, yes, always put that into a trust. But again, as you can tell, everything is dependent upon your specific circumstance, your family's specific circumstance. We got to sit down and talk about this and develop a plan.
Talk about some of the new laws regarding inherited IRAs.
Yeah, last year there was a bipartisan bill. It passed overwhelmingly back in December of 2019. And so now in 2020, it took over. So it's already been enacted for over a year. And it really changed how a beneficiary inherits an IRA. So it used to be that if someone passes away and a beneficiary is specifically named, then the beneficiary could use the remaining portion of their life to quote unquote stretch out the IRA. So what that means, very similar to if you are reach 59 and a half, you can start taking RMDs, required minimum distributions. And there's a fancy formula that the IRS uses, which is your life expectancy divided into a mathematical formula that also says what is the value of your IRA. And it comes up with the IRS after you turn 70 and a half, now 72, that's actually a new part of the law, that says you are required to actually take money out. Okay, that similar formula, it's minorly different, but that a similar formula was used in the old law. which if my parents passed away and I received an IRA, then the IRS would say, okay, Paul, we expect you to live for another 30 years or more. So whatever that number is. And you inherited blank number of dollars from your IRA. So therefore, we're going to use a mathematical formula with those two numbers, how long your life expectancy is based upon an IRS table, single life table, versus how much you have inherited. And we're going to come up with a fancy number, and you're required to take that much from your IRA. But I was allowed to use it for really a lifetime. It was a wonderful deal.
So it can stay as an IRA.
It stayed as an IRA. Okay. That it's very important. So thank you for qualifying that. And
you didn't have to cash it out.
You didn't have to cash it out. So now, because the U.S. government has been spending money like wildfire, specifically with 2020 in our rearview mirror, it's been even worse, been printing money in the groves, and it's only risen our national debt. Well, so now the Congress, in their infinite wisdom, has determined that we're going to take away that luxury. And now someone who inherits an IRA, instead of their lifetime, they have 10 years to use that money, to cash out that money. So now, math typically says if you are going to earn similar amounts over those 10 years, that it would be best if you took 10% of that IRA every year and that you took income little by little. Now, that may not always be the case, but as a general premise, you now must take 10% of your IRA, which for most people is dramatically more than what your life expectancy was when you received an inherited IRA. So what it does is it creates a far greater tax burden to the inheritor to pay, and we lose more money at the beneficiary level than what the old system was because you only had to take a little. So now really, if you have a financial advisor, if you have a CPA, if you have an estate planning attorney, you really need to be thinking in terms of what is in my beneficiary's best interest. If you have a beneficiary, if you have a child, so let's say that...
I was going to say what age? Any age?
Any age.
Younger people probably pay a higher tax than an older person.
Well, and that's kind of where I'm going, which is that the analysis now is more of how much tax burden will the beneficiary have? And it might be better overall to take more out of your IRA than just your RMDs, because if we look at estate planning holistically, in other words, the whole family structure, instead of being client-centric and only looking at what you want, it might be in the family's long-term best interest for you to begin to cash out more of your IRA for the account holder to pay more taxes versus having that IRA passed down and passing a higher tax burden to somebody else. It may not, but I'm just saying estate planning should already be a holistic viewpoint. It should never be just a bubble viewpoint. But nonetheless, nowadays with this IRA adjustment, it's even more critical. Now, our time is running out, so I want to name just a couple of things that this does not apply to. So number one, you can leave an entire IRA to a spouse, and it does not create the 10-year rule. If you have a minor child, that minor child can receive an IRA, and it would not start the 10-year rule until they're 18. Number one, never leave an IRA to a minor child. You really have to do estate planning. To a disabled beneficiary, they can use the 10-year rule. A chronically ill beneficiary or someone who is less than 10 years. Now, there are complications in all of those exceptions. And when we come back to what I've said over and over in this discussion of financial integration, which is we need good estate planning at the beginning, then every asset, including your IRA, must be integrated into the plan to accomplish the full vision that God has given you so that you can create the legacy that you desire.
Okay, very interesting information this week. Financial integration, so important on the steps that Paul outlines in good financial planning, estate planning. People are interested. Paul, how do they get in touch with you?
Head over to my website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts. There's ways to communicate with us and upcoming workshops so that we can get the education done properly. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, Legacy and Faith Show with estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant here on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.